Remember when you were starting your career or starting something fresh? Or maybe you're starting now and it was exciting and new and you were learning and growing. You also thought that the company and your manager would help you guide your career path. Well, how's that going? My name is Todd Doherty and I host a podcast called Manage Me. I have 30 years of client, product, and operations experience from startups to retail to Fortune 100 companies. Listen in as I share real-world stories of business and life with solutions you can use. I'll have occasional fantastic guests that will share their insights as well. Come join me and learn real-world guides on how to be the most successful you and manage you. That's Manage Me Podcast and managemepodcast@gmail.com.
Okay, team, welcome back to the Manage Me podcast. I am your host, Todd Doherty, Manage Me Coaching, todd@managemecoaching.com, if you want to reach out. Season three, here we are, continuing season three. And this season is all about meeting with coaches, leaders, founders of coaching organizations, training to some extent, but training in the sense of leadership training and life and purpose training. And I am so excited to have Darren Ho here, Darren J. Ho, who is the founder and leadership coach of Restored Leader. Darren, welcome to the Manage Me podcast.
Todd, thanks for having me. It's a joy to be with you today, and I look forward to our conversation.
Awesome. Darren, you have quite a background. I won't put numbers on it because we don't want to age ourselves here, but a good tenure at a Fortune 500 company, as you know, leadership development, global leadership development. And you've taken that, I imagine, as this massive jumping off point to create your own company called the Restored Leader. Yeah. Can you tell us about, you know, what is that journey that you know, what got you here today? What is that platform that you had? And then how did you come to the realization? I'm asking you two big questions. Sure. What was your journey? And then what was that big event or time or decision point that you said, I need to go do this on my own?
Yeah, so I'll start out with some big chunks and then you know, as you feel
Let's dig in.
Feel free to do that. You know, for anyone who's listening out there who has felt the frustration of really enjoying their job, but knowing there's something else that they should be doing. I should say even this, having enjoyed their career, but knowing that there's something else perhaps outside of the construct of what they think is their career.
Yeah.
There's a tension there. And usually in that space, there is something called fear. And fear prevents you from actually taking action on exploring that tension. You know what? The other thing that I've noticed in my just time working, I've been working professionally for say 25 years now, is that fear causes us to go back to what's comfortable. And if it's really comfortable, and I think anyone who's working in a Fortune, whatever, they're comfortable. Yeah. It's top 1%. Okay. So how do we really unpack that? That's really the story. The story of how I became an entrepreneur after nearly 20 years working in big pharma was really about that tension and leading into the fear of what would it be like to actually pursue what I know is my calling outside of what I've known for 20 years? Right. I just think that story might identify with a lot of people. And
I know it's identifying with me, as I will tell you that, like, literally since college, when I was in business school and just, you know, I always knew I was always in businesses, my parents' business and starting my own small businesses and all that stuff. I just knew there was something else. And even, you know, joining large organizations and startups, it's all the way through my professional career. I mean, you spot on, right? There was always this tension, but also this fear of what if I follow this tension? What if I go down this road? Boy, that feels very unsafe. And I've got this family to provide for. And
right.
What if I fail and all those things, right?
Also normal. And let's just be honest, if you can't be even honest about that, then you're probably not going to be a good entrepreneur. And you're probably not going to be a risk taker of any sort. And so I think you should just be okay with living in comfort. And there's plenty of people that want that type of viewpoint on their life and their career. Yep. For me, it was very much a tension in the last 10 of my 19 years. And it started in this very moment where I realized what I had hoped for in the relationships at work with the leaders that I work for, what I had hoped for was slowly not actually being realized. What I hoped for was leaders who were inspiring, who didn't compromise who they said they were and wanted to become, and that would be good for not just me, their follower, but for the entire company. And I saw less and less of that. And I said, "Whoa!" I started asking the question, what's going on here? It was about that time I also just came to pay more attention to my identity, my faith, and what all of this meant, because so much of my thinking was career. Mm. And I realized that I needed to take a note from why I joined the company out of undergrad, which was the three core values of our company that I worked for really meant something.
Right.
And now I'm resurrecting that, and I should say redeeming that, buying it back and placing it in a place to actually be valued in its rightful place. That's an economic term.
Yeah.
And I went on this 10-year journey while working at the company, testing out this thesis. So I'll just tell you this, if people don't know it, they do change because they have a hypothesis or a thesis of change that it will result in something different. And I think entrepreneurs all have a thesis of change. And mine was this: simply put, if everybody knew their core values and did not compromise them, then how would that change the way they lead their unit, themselves, their unit, as well as the world? And that was my thesis. And then I tested it, and eventually, through circumstances that were not because of my own courage, started the Restored Leader. And we've been so blessed to be still working today, 5 years later.
That is awesome. And you know, to your point, sometimes what's great that you had, it's great that you had this thesis, right? And you started testing it. I want to get back to that in a minute.
Sure.
But you know, sometimes in life, that's why I asked my that second part of that question is, what was that spark, that point, that pivot point, that moment in time? Sometimes it's not our own control. Sometimes yeah. It's, you know, I have this thesis, but I'm kind of comfortable here. And then wait, that comfort went away. And now I need to make a decision. Do I go find that comfort again? Or do I pursue something that's a little more uncomfortable or a lot uncomfortable? And boy, I'll tell you, the more, this is season three for this podcast, and I'm talking with, you know, dozens of coaches like yourself, and there's an underlying theme there that it's, I had this either idea or concept, no one's used the word thesis yet, I love that, but something changed in my life. Sometimes it was personal, sometimes it was professional, and I went all in. And it's really exciting to hear how that happens and then the success from that.
It's a great summary. That's exactly right. That's what happened. Went all in. And it wasn't, again, because I was so courageous. It wasn't right. Because
I'd interrupt you. I would say you're saying you're not courageous and you're doing what I do a lot, which is, you know, I'm not that brave, I'm not courageous. But you could have, as I said before, you could have just went back to comfort.
Well, right? I could have.
That was an option.
I could have. And I guess I say that not to try to be over humble, because I think what's important about, we say at the Restored Leader, confidence is so important, but confidence is this tension between ambition and humility.
Yeah.
So if ambition is knock it out of the park, dream bigger than you could ever imagine in one generation to achieve. And humility is that you got to think of yourself as a vessel of learning, because if you don't, no one will follow you.
Right.
And so, in humility, I'll tell you this, every step of the way, without the right people around me, my personal board of directors, my wife particularly, to just counsel me through the fear of stepping into courage.
Yeah.
That is important. And it's actually a really big part of our coaching approach, which is we're assessing actually your relational health with people that speak into you.
Right.
Because it's really important. you are corrupted by a lot of things in the world right now. What comes in is not always good. So if you don't know your core values, then you wouldn't know what to let in and what not to let in. And so that's another important part about being a healthy, emotionally healthy, spiritually healthy leader that leads ventures that are going to impact generations.
Absolutely. You know, I almost feel like I'm selling this book, but I'm not. It just happens to be the last book I read, and my current organization, we're doing a lot with it. But and you and I talked in our pre-podcast discussion, you know, Brené Brown's Dare to Lead. And I've been using this technique that she talks about. Ironically, it's something about like a hand, how she found this out. It was like a heated discussion with her husband about a ham sandwich or something that like of all things, it was nothing important. But what she found was, to your point, she was telling herself something in her head from, you know, unconnected dots of information that was not true. And instead of using that and having that come out, she said, well, wait a minute, let me explain to this person who was her husband. But, you know, she said, the story I'm telling myself is XYZ, right?
Right.
And it's such a disarming way to start a conversation rather than, you know, you did this because, you know, and that's the thought that I had, right? And I actually just used it the other day with my boss.
Yeah,
we're both going through this Dare to Lead, and I said, well, let me try this. And he was in my mind, I was telling myself he was avoiding having a difficult conversation with me about a particular thing. And so I sent him a note, because I sent him a couple notes and I tried to bring it up in our meetings, and he kind of dished it off. And I said, you know what? In my mind, you're not responding to me because you're afraid to tell me some really bad news that I can't do XYZ.
Hmm.
And I sent him an email, and I'm telling you, it was within 15 minutes, I got a phone call. And he said, no, let's clear this out. I want to be sure that we understand. And then at the end, I said, hey, that was pretty good, wasn't it? He goes, yeah, that was brilliant. That was brilliant use of Dare to Lead. It was awesome. But, you know, this isn't about me. This is really kind of your thought of the inputs coming in, you know, to create the filter that we see and act on. And tell me more about how do you work with people to, I guess, recognize and maybe overcome or adjust with that?
Yeah, that's a really good transition, actually, and a good example from a really notable author.
Yeah.
What's important about, I think, very emotionally aware people is that they are willing to admit and they want to grow and move forward. And that's a perfect person to coach. So coaching is really about becoming aware and then taking that awareness, which is often what Sir John Whitmore quoted as EQ in action. Coaching is EQ in action, where you're able to then just say, okay, I'm aware. And now that creates freedom to actually decide with options of what else I can do next.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the essence of coaching. In our approach, we take that essence, and what we want to found it on is what you believe you ground your entire existence in. Whatever it is, own it. Whatever it is, own it. And we call these things core values. A lot of what has been written in the last 20 years on core values really, I think, started, and I was very influenced by Jorge Paras and Jim Collins and Good to Great, Built to Last, about these core values, why they're important. And then Patrick Lencioni, another person I admire, just continued to talk more about this and usually talks a lot about this in his book, The Advantage. Both great reference points. One of the things that we make a distinction about core values is core values are like fingerprints for you. You cannot pick them from a list. They're entirely yours. They're yours to identify. And they are how you see yourself and you see the world. And thus, if you compromise them, you're essentially feeling like you failed yourself,
right?
And thus, anyone entrusted to your care, you're going to fail. You can create life hacks to figure out how to not go into failure modes. We do it all the time. But a redemption restoration process is very distinct. Redeeming means to buy back something of value that was maybe formerly lost or hidden, and to place it and use it in a line of sight of which it is truly valued. You know, just think about the process of finding something you used to know about you and spending a bit more time with it and realizing, gosh, that is something that's beautiful about yourself. And that puts you on a journey of restoring. That is becoming what you should be, what you ought to be, what you want to be, but having a vision for that. So you can't go on a restoration journey without knowing you're broken and that you need something redeemed.
Right.
And I think starting at your core values is the best place to help a leader stop the bad narratives that prevent them from being the leader that they really know they've always wanted to be.
So without even knowing, well, maybe you did know it, and maybe I just didn't know it, and now I'm kind of sucked in, but you are starting to talk about the restored leader, I'm going to call it process, right? You have, you know, redeem your core, protect your core, live your core. So you've started to talk about that first part, which is redeem your core.
Yeah. Right? Yes.
And I love that. Let's move on to the next, protect your core. And I think you started to talk about that, which is once you know what your core values are, you protect them and you use them in the right way and you are aware of them so that you don't, I say, go against those or can you unredeem something? I don't know if that's the right word. That's probably not even a real word.
You lose its presence or its value, right? Pushed aside and thrown away. Think about people who are marginalized.
Yeah.
Your value as humans.
Right.
It's always been there, but they just get marginalized, right? For any reason, it doesn't. You can be marginalized just because you have more hair than others.
Right.
You can be marginalized the other way around.
Less hair.
Exactly. So there's so many ways to make this, and I appreciate you taking that as a funny thing, right? Because
I make jokes about my hair every day.
There's so many obvious things that we experience every day as people. Right. We do. We get marginalized for things that we shouldn't be. So what's distinct about our process is we focus on protecting the core as defining rest. So rest is the most important available skill that you have that nobody can tell you what is. Nobody can tell you what it is, and you got to define it. I draw a bit from ancient text in the Old Testament about how rest means to stop and then to delight. So to stop is to really decide that in the stopping there is a delight. And in what? And it's usually in time, because you can't produce or really make time. But in the real sense, you are given time to steward. And so thus you have to decide how to invest your activity, your thought, your ever being in it. When we start looking at protecting your core, and after you've redeemed them and identified them and defined them and anchored them in what you believe is true, okay, this is your worldview, then where does rest come as a skill of leadership? When I look at the leaders that I've worked with and the transformation they've gone through, they become models of rest, but they don't expect everyone else to rest the way they do. What they do is they're able to define what it means to them to overflow in the joy of really realizing that their core values are their core values. And joy is a posture. It doesn't matter what season you're in, what circumstances. And don't you want to follow a joyful leader?
Right, of course, yeah.
Don't you want to follow joy? I mean, a leader has to be capable, right? But they've got to be joyful, because if they're not, regardless of the circumstance, they can make sense of it. It's not always happy-go-lucky. That's kind of feeling and happiness. I'm talking about this deep sense that I am enjoying knowing who I am through these challenges. I am enjoying leading you through these challenges. And I have a lot of hope that there is another side to this. That is the journey of leading people to places they've never been. So rest is a cornerstone skill no one wants to talk about.
Wow, there's so much for me to unpack there. I've been like scribbling notes here just to make sure I don't forget. I was listening to you. It's one of my skills that I'm learning to listen, truly listen, without trying to come, think about my response or my next question. But let me touch on a couple of things.
Sure.
I am kind of giving away some of our secrets of this podcast here that you and I already met. And you asked me a question. You asked me what, you know, how, I think, I don't remember exactly how you phrased it, but you know, what's the one word of how you are right now? And I said, well, interesting. I'm sort of practicing with my team and my boss, two words. And I said, right now, Darren, I'm feeling overwhelmed, but optimistic. Those are my two words. And I'm coming back to the rest part, right? So I'm conscious that I'm overwhelmed and I know that I need to rest And so my process over the next 24, 48 hours is, what am I going to start, stop, continue, so that I can rest. And, you know, rest to me this weekend might be, you know, it's good weather here in Atlanta and I'm going to go on a, you know, really long hike, right? Mm-hmm. You know, that's my rest thing.
Sounds great.
Doesn't mean I'm going to sit on the couch and do nothing all day, right? Which is another option I might choose, but probably not. That's not me. But I'm realizing that while I value hard work, I'm starting to learn that too much hard work limits my effectiveness, my creativeness, my ability to truly lead, which is one of my jobs. So I'm learning, I'm getting there. I'm hopeful. The other thing that you mentioned was, oh, Darren, I'm not going to get it right, but I thought of a because I was trying to listen to you, but I thought of a great, you talked about a joyful leader, and joy doesn't necessarily mean happy-go-lucky or anything like that, but you want to follow a leader who, and I'm paraphrasing because I don't remember exactly the words you said, is a leader and has skills, but also you want to follow because they have a certain attitude, a certain, you know, they're there to help you as an individual and as a team.
Yeah.
And you made me think of something. A little teeny light bulb went off in my head and I didn't realize it at the time, but I just realized it now because you said it in that way. Was I remember going through a very, very challenging time at a former company. I had taken over a new team when it was in the banking industry, heavy regulation. It was, you know, post the whole Lehman Brothers fiasco. And it was several years of just really, really hard work. And I remember talking to my direct reports, which is a small management team of 6 or 7 people, some of which were very new to managing and leading teams. And I said, hey guys, let's just take a break on all this stuff we're working on. I have to tell you, when you look back on this time period and how hard we're working and all the stuff you're learning and all the challenges that you overcome and all that years down the road, you don't think about it now. You probably won't even remember me saying this, but you're going to value this time. You're going to remember that this was worthwhile. You did great things. You worked really hard and there were great results. I have no idea if any of them remember that. I don't know if any of them will be listening. If they remember, please reach out to me. But I do remember later that year, this same very team won the chairman's award, the highest award in our organization for the success that they achieved. Had very little to do with me, but that I just remember thinking, I wonder if they got it, you know, that all this hard work, all this learning. The other thing I said was, you're going to look back and you're going to say, my current job was so much easier than that. I've got it made here because it was so difficult and challenging now. And I grew all these skills and now I know how to deal with all these things. So that was really powerful what you said about, you know, following joyful leaders. That's that is going to stick with me for sure.
Really good. Well, the idea of joy is output, and joy can't be really the input for sustained long-term generational growth. So
right.
You think about leading ventures. I tend to work with venture leaders who look generationally versus just look at buying, selling out, and then starting something new. There's a space for that. And maybe that comes with my blue chip background. Yeah, perhaps. But the other distinction I'd say about this idea of protecting the core is, I mentioned this idea that your core values are like fingerprints, right?
Right.
How often do you actually notice the nuances of your own fingerprint?
Right.
You don't. You actually take it for granted, which is how you start marginalizing these truths. So rest should include spending time with you in a way that's really formative. It's a redemptive action to actually spend more time with the core values that mean the most to you. And learn yourself again, learn yourself new again. And yeah, it might be disappointing, it might be challenging, but if you're focused on the core, what it does is it reorients your mind to notice. And all coaches would tell you the same.
Yeah.
We're trying to help you notice what is true about you, whether that's a negative narrative or positive narrative, notice it. And now we get to make a decision of, as you're aware, what's going on. So rest must include how you spend time with you and your core values.
I love it. And then the next is living those core values.
That's right.
That's the last of the three areas. Consciously allowing yourself to kind of really what you were just talking about, consciously allowing yourself to live out your core values.
Right. And this is the application. So if you think about redeeming your core, that's like the research hard work. Then it's like the consulting piece, right? You kind of do consulting in yourself and you just kind of make sense of things. You think, okay, are these it? Are these not? Is this the right strategy to take? Whatnot? When you actually protect them, you're actually reinvesting a significant or maybe a disproportionate amount of time to really get to know yourself in a new way. Now, living the core is, interestingly enough, 50% of our clients that I work with, they rush to that part without doing the first two really, really well.
Okay.
Because what they want is they want to do a turnkey application. And what I noticed in that is it's just a reflection of our society. Living your core is simply based on the fact that every relationship has an opportunity for you to live your core values. Not every project, not every task. First, every relationship. Because as a leader in the workplace, at home or in community, there are tasks to do. There are strategies to make, but there are people that you do them with or you do them through.
Right.
Maybe you don't even think about the people. That's where we are unfortunately moving to in some industries and sectors and whatnot, that we're marginalizing the human of the human being and we're doing humans doing. So as a leader, when you are living your core, you always have to remember that core values live in relationships. So how do you present your core in the context of the relationship so that you're actually fully bringing the integrity of a relationship into your leadership? That right there is the stuff. And I think it's hard to do that well without knowing what your core is and having the overflow of rest to actually implement your core. And that's what we found to be a really important success in these three steps of moving in those three steps and then circling back and touching base where we need. But the application is really living the core.
Right. You know, and through all that, one of the things that I'm finding both personally, but also talking with other people is you can talk to someone like you or read a book about, you know, you need to discover your core value, your worldview, and you can do, you know, exercises in the book and thinking and stuff. But at least I've found that doing it 100% on your own is like nearly impossible.
It's impossible. It's,
you know, maybe I should just speak for myself. I shouldn't speak for anyone else. I've found that, you know, trying to discover my core values, trying to define my world purpose, trying to define my greater purpose, all that is, you know, I get to a certain point and I'm like, I don't know. I don't know. I don't know where to go next. I don't know how to do this. And frankly, get frustrated and typically give up. And then I put it aside and I come back to it, you know, days or weeks later and I try it again. And I really get to the same point. but how do I phrase this question? How do you work with, and you've told us the process, right? And maybe I skipped to that too quickly, but how do you work with clients? Who's your ideal client and how does that ideal relationship form?
Yeah, that's a really good question. So, I mean, every coach has their own executive presence that they bring to the relationship. Every coach has a thesis of change. This is just mine. You've heard, everyone gets to hear my thesis of change. It's not really that proprietary. It's my thesis of change. And it works for how I coach. At the end of the day, anybody can use this framework and coach. True. But that's the whole point, is that, Todd, coaching is such an important, not only profession, but role within relationships with people, a created, trusted space focused on the other for them to be aware and explore what's possible. That's just what we do. So when we start with redeeming, we explore what rest is, then we explore the contextual leadership situations for yourself, self-leading, home, working, community, whichever one you want to contextualize. And that application really, really works. Here's the thing that I think people are most surprised about. When we coach people who are emerging leaders to founders, to ex-executive founders, entrepreneurs, to founders, to funders, we ask three questions, and those three questions can go a long way, right? What is most meaningful to you, core values? Two, what is rest? Okay, and number three, what's your role in relationship to whoever. Most likely, we talk about impasse. You just talked about an impasse you had with your boss.
Right.
So what we're getting to here is let's just answer the first question. What is your role? How do you come into that role? Let me give you a really tangible example. A founder says that they are struggling with a lot of delegation. And this happens so much because they are the apex of the organization. They've done everything. And now they're trying to figure out how to get others to do it.
Right.
They go home and they realize they struggle with the same thing. Okay, great. So two different roles, same person, two different roles. Yeah. Think about how to make that distinguish clear. And then think about the actual behaviors that are different, tactics, strategies even, that you would use to apply at work or at home. Same person, same core values.
Right.
That's a coaching process. And because we are not experts at other people's lives, we need to allow the expertise of the person that is living that life in their context to come out. And that's why we coach.
And you ask those questions to draw that out and to say, what would this look like and how would this work? And usually the answer's there, but just don't know it.
And then that's it, Todd. The answers are there, but to your very point, you like I, like any human being, in the journey of getting into the inner work and the liminal space between the thinking and the real commitment to doing, you need conversation with trusted people.
Right.
And I always like to make this distinction. I think I do a lot of mentoring too, which I say is pouring in, but pouring in with my biases and my context.
Right.
We coach as non-biased as possible, and we coach following your context. And we're making you more aware of your context. We're making you more creative in your options. And that is a hard role to play, but when you're called to it and you're a professional in it, it is the greatest joy in the calling of any vocation, just like being a husband, being a father, and being a friend.
Absolutely.
I call being a coach is just the greatest blessing and joy to be called into.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, when you see someone kind of a light bulb goes off or they take some action and something super successful happens, it's just the greatest.
The greatest.
You know, we're just a tiny, tiny little itsy bitsy piece of that, but it's so fantastic to be part of
and
that.
And who gets the credit, right?
Right.
You.
Right.
Your context, right. You are the client, you get the credit. And I love being number two or number three or number four in the credit line.
Yeah.
It's helpful for my ego, Todd.
Yeah, it's absolutely.
Helpful for my ego.
You know, a tangential story here. My family business, where my name comes from, is a retail jewelry business, Reed and Todd Jewelers, 1883. My great-great-grandfather started the business. And anyway, I worked in the business since I could remember, like literally, like my, you know, I remember like emptying the garbage pails in the offices, right? That was like my first job and being so proud of that. And then, you know, working my way up to being out on the floor and helping customers and things. My first sale, I'll never forget, it was $100 gold necklace. I thought it was like the best thing in the world. I remember ringing that up on the cash register and I just thought it was the coolest thing. But I didn't realize until I was probably... I would come home from college. So in retail business, particularly jewelry stores, you make 70% of your revenue between the day after Thanksgiving and Christmas Eve. That's the big prime time. That's, you know, Black Friday, all that stuff, right? But it's so true, particularly in jewelry stores. So, you know, my parents worked so hard, day after Thanksgiving to Christmas Eve, super hard. Then I would come home from school Christmas and I'd have a month off. And so they would take off and I would run the store. And I look back thinking I was like 19, 20 years old, like running the store, signing payroll checks for people who were at least twice my age and stuff. And I think, oh, I wonder what they thought of me. I can't even imagine. Hopefully I was a decent person at that time. But I do also remember, like, why is this so joyful? Why is this so exciting? Why do I like this so much? Part of it was certainly doing, right? Managing the business, et cetera. But the other part, which I didn't realize this honestly until I was about 30, was somewhat similar to coaching. When you're selling someone a piece of jewelry, except for I can think of two occasions in my many decades of years that it was not a positive experience. Let me explain. You're always a part of someone's birthday, someone's wedding, someone's anniversary, someone's just graduation gift, you're a little teeny piece of that.
Yeah.
Knowing that they're going to have that piece of jewelry for the rest of their lives. The two that I say weren't necessarily as exciting were they were happened to be a moment of a small child had died and a teenager had died, and they wanted to commemorate that. Now, again, maybe I should look at that a different way. We were still a tiny itsy bitsy little piece of that, maybe not in a celebratory way, but maybe just a recognition sort of way. But anyway, when you were telling that story, I was relating that in my mind of, wow, it is so great to be a part of something with your expertise and to give that to someone and then, but still remain just a little teeny piece of that success.
Wonderful. Yeah. Those are great stories that you're bringing from early formative experiences. And even in that narrative, there's just some really important distinctions to pull out there that really bring you purpose and joy, and they can be replicated in your current context, in your current job. You have that control. You really do. And I think that's important sometimes to really be known as a human is to go back and to look so that you can go forward. You have to redeem stories that really affected you, and they're not always good.
Yeah,
it's really not always good. And then if we know that we can't get beyond what's possible, we need therapy. And that's why there's that profession as well. So one of the beautiful things is that we have enough talent in the world here to help people on their human journey, because we are all humans and we know what it's like to long and to grieve, to want to be known, to want your joy, success, to be loved. That's why this is it's a great profession and great topics that we're talking about. They're important.
I could talk to you for like the next 6 hours here. I'm sure we would be hoarse and not be able to talk after that point.
But I don't know if anyone else would want to listen to how much.
Yeah, true. Well, I know I could. Who cares? I'm just kidding. So speaking of people listening, right? If people are saying, I get it, I understand it, this is something that's hitting me. What's the best way for someone to reach out to you and engage?
Oh, Todd, that's great. I mean, this is my life's work, and it's something that I hold pretty loosely to, which is I don't know where it's going to go, but I know it's going somewhere. And that's just because we beta test everything from day one of being an entrepreneur to where we are 5 years later. So I appreciate the opportunity to just kind of share to get a hold of us. You go to restoredleader.com. And you can pick up a copy of our guidebook. This is actually just launched. We're going to actually start talking about it more on April 1. So we're just kind of getting ready for that.
Awesome. Here we go. This is the launch right here.
The launch. And for anybody that hears this, if you type in core values 23 as your exit code, when you go through the shopping account, you just pick up a free copy of it. At the same time, looking at that and just seeing if that journey is the one you really want to go into, you can easily find us through our website as well. You can always email me at Darren@therestoredleader.com. That would be therestoredleader.com. But I'm easily accessible, and I look forward to meeting people who just want to talk about this journey, becoming the leader that they've always wanted to be.
Fantastic. I will commit to putting all of that in the episode notes so that people can just click on the links and so you don't have to worry about pulling over your car right now if you're driving.
Yeah. Don't pull over your car, please. Yeah, it's not good
for health. We're typing that.
Is not it while you're talking. Yourself? Yes. Yeah.
So I'll put that all in the podcast notes. And I want to ask you I'm going to say one more question. I might have another one, but one at least for sure, something I've completely ripped off from another podcast. And I really value your input on this. Mm-hmm. When you hear management coach, what does that mean to you? And I'm trying not to lead the witness here, but what does that mean to you?
Yeah, I'm glad you asked that question. You know, being somebody in the space of leadership development and journeys and making distinguish that our approach to coaching is really more formation. It's really forming that inner life that it really then presents itself outwardly. There is management involved in that. So manage me is really to me in the context of self-leadership. And as such, there are things to manage. So here's things, what can we manage? Well, we're given really three primary things in our lives: our talent.
Yep.
Okay. We have to steward our talent, our treasure. If we have a dollar or a penny, we got to steward that, right? And our time. So when I think about manage me, I'm thinking, how am I managing myself around these gifts that I'm given? Because they mean more than just for today. People are listening and they're struggling with just eating right now. Well, that's a very different context than somebody who's like thinking, how much money do I give away?
Right.
All of it still has to do with managing time, your treasure, right, and your talent. And I'm hopeful for anyone on that perspective that taking some more time to look at how you manage those things in yourself will help you become a better leader, regardless of your context.
Wow, that's awesome. I can't wait to, I'm going to listen to that section about four times. one of the reasons why is you just hit home for me. I'm a huge triad, you know, thinking threes, planning threes, talking threes, you know, presenting threes. So the talent, treasure, time, I will rip that off, but give you complete credit for that. That's awesome. Love it.
No problem. I'm happy to contribute to the community. It's just great to be able to talk about these things.
Yeah. Well, speaking of that, thank you for taking time out of your extremely valuable time and day to talk with me and with the Manage Me podcast audience. Love the message, love what you're doing. Huge supporter. I will capture this in the podcast notes. I hope that anyone who has any interest will go out and redeem your code for your value book.
Yeah.
And the last thing I want to do is just leave this door open just a crack, because I'd love to make sure that we continue to connect and maybe in the future have another episode on kind of what's next and where you've been and how successful you've been.
Oh, wow. I'd love to follow up with you on another conversation. Thanks for inviting me again.
All right. Thanks again for coming. Appreciate you.
Thanks, Todd.
Hey, you know, these podcasts don't pay for themselves. So I want to let you know that I'm a member of Dollar Shave Club. I've been a member since 2013. It literally costs me $5 a month, less than $5 a month, to get my razors delivered to me for my face and my head. And you have the opportunity to do the same thing. Check in my episode notes. You'll see a link to Dollar Shave Club. You can get your razors, your shaving cream, body wash. They sell tons of products, and the quality is exactly the same as you would buy from any of the regular shavers out there, all the name brands. So Dollar Shave Club, can't recommend them enough. Thanks for listening today. It's always great to share ideas and also get feedback from you. So please send me an email at managemepodcast@gmail.com. Visit my website, manageme.godaddysites.com. And both those areas, whether it's email or website, you can send me questions. You can refer me to sponsors. And I'd love to hear from you. I'd love to have you as a guest. I'd love to hear your thoughts around whether the guests we're having and the topics we're having are working for you, and would love to hear anything that you'd like to hear on the upcoming podcast. Thanks again for listening, and appreciate it.